soon as we get started. That could be one of two things. Either something which tangentially touches one text, one pasuk, one phrase, but otherwise not directly and intimately related to the narrative, to the events, to personalities, delineated in the parasha, or something which does include all of those components, and therefore would enable a greater spread and a broader reach. The advantages of taking the second words are obvious, but that would take the first root. And I've taken something which appears in this week's parasha, and which, if Chazal had not pounced upon it, we might not have done it on our own, but which can be cut in both ways, as isolated phrase, or something which confronts us, which challenges us, trying to deal with a central problem in Mishnah, in theological thought, and in philosophical speculation. At the same time, what I'm dealing with could be dealt with irrespective of this week's parasha. So in a sense, the parasha is going to be the point of the parasha which I'm going to touch upon this would be a peg in which to hang a hat, and yet also, if sensitively and extensively discussed, can touch base on a range of basic issues and some theological thought. The title of the talk is the Kev Shemayim Kiyoretz. Two phrases in the mind of Rabbi Yeshua 22, which appear in the parasha and appear within the context of a single parasha of this week's larger parasha. Recall that aging Avraham concerned about the future of his family and of Klal Yisrael. He has to plan, to plot, to find a shidduch. So shidduch of Yehuda was apparently there at that time. But the need a spouse for a mate, that is certainly had. That issue is presumably perturbed, perhaps tormented, of all of you, because so large a portion of his life, decades upon decades, he found himself driven by anxiety in different circumstances for different reasons. About this very issue, what does the future hold in store? What does history hold in store? For Avraham, for Beis Avraham, this is a concern per se, because the values that Avraham cherishes and which he wants to communicate to future generations are near and dear to him personally and of critical importance philosophically to the words of days. And Avraham, depending upon I put picture what has of him with the Rabbi of the Ravis of the Shlagish. He's a person who, beyond most other individuals, many individuals live life from day to day. They get up every morning and begin to cope, to wrestle with theology. Either they raise their hands in despair, or on the contrary, they think it'll be okay, they're optimistic. Rambam is different, Rambam is concerned. Rabbi Elikhi Roshero is almost an obsessive concern. Avraham, precisely because he's the founder of Israel, and therefore his concern is not only at the personal level, but at the collective, the historical level. So this concern about what will the future hold, is there a future? This is a great moment to him. So the past, he'd been to that scenario and seemingly came out on top. From a generation or two, he could see nothing which would satisfy him as far as the future is concerned. And while at that point the question was not what kind of family, but what kind of individual, well, if you have a child, how it shall be raised, how he climbed himself, how he serves a bridge to the future. All of that troubled him, but as we know, as Pasvayev is all about, the mission played off of one's fear since Malachim, and apparently hopes to put to rest Avraham's concerns. I presume that what he hopes to put to rest is not only the particular crisis which immediately confronts him at a given point. He wants, at some level, to reorient the character, the nature, what kind of concerns that Ben Avraham has. Of course, it's terrible to see a bull that gets to one bridge, crosses it successfully, and thus there's another bridge. And if a person wants to soothe Avraham, you have to the capacity, the habit, crossing bridges rather than being prevented from moving by that. So that has been one challenge of Avraham's life. But clearly there's a difference between having no offspring and having but it's a necessary condition, but a sufficient one for building a family. So it goes into the Yazor. And he picks for him the scenario, the situation that confronts him. Getting back to the question, what troubles him? Situation which has to do not only with Avraham's past experience, but his present situation. He's ill, he's incapacitated, he's totally dependent. And dependency, of course, is the curse of old age. People who have been not the dependent but independent, those that they were the source of strength, the provision. And now the tables have turned, and there's Avraham, and probably at some point there's a hint of Yirapas Vayera, the vision of Avraham that we have, son of Vayera, the man is old and sick, can't fend for himself, and there he needs to get the Rebbe Avraham. This point is reinforced by the fact that he's not defined by name, because to a certain extent he doesn't need a particular person. He needs a person. So he may have in mind a particular person who thinks would be good, personally, professionally, but he can't be certain. But he can't be choosy at this point, being as dependent as he is. So he calls in Avraham and begins to present the situation, interview him to work for a job. This is my masiv, these are my needs, this is what I'd like you to do. In the course of making that pitch, writing the narrative, or giving him a background, how he imagined the past, that is no longer viable in the present or the future. And therefore he has to present him the situation so that Eved Avraham himself can deal with it. That calls for the narrative. The Pasuk, Parsha, cites that which Avraham has stated, and for our purposes focuses upon one particular phrase.
His family, his background.
And then Eved begins to question, but just as it's not your control, it's not my control either. What happens? The prospective bride, which he will choose, will refuse. So Rav tells him, if that's the case, you have to be released from your commitment. And Maimonim will hope, expect in the future at some point an alternative bride will show up. The 2 points this parsha, of course, that was narrative, preference to make the mention. First, he describes what had happened Bichon, what happens here? The term which is used to relate to Mishloim is Havayim, Kishraim, and Kiharetz. Later on, when it quotes the same narrative, he deals with a chapter which time an earlier point, which that form has been charged and mandated, there are different terms used. The term which is employed is not a Keshe of Kiharetz, but simply a Keshe Shemai. What is the importance? From a certain point of view, one might say, well, Sakhol is a grammatical point, question as to what he relates, or perhaps where he's located. It places above you, and places the Bein Shleilam in a certain context, mapping out the world's reality which he confronts. Now this in and of itself be problematic. The common denominator seemingly between the two modes of reference are that there is a location, a relation which is described, which is taken for, which is assumed. The question is, which it is? Is it confined to Shemaim? Does it encompass Shemaim and Eretz as well? From a certain point of view, that in and of itself is problematic. Well, the medalist later on, speaking of the notion of space and place, vis-à-vis the Bais Shleilam, medalist says, "Hu mekomo shel olam v'eino mekomo." It's not that the world, the universe, the cosmos, is the scenario, the locus, within what the Shechinah resides. But rather the reverse is the scene, the setting for the cosmos. At that point, what's of significance in certain respects is not necessarily reflected in two references of this parsha. And in any event, it's not upon this that Chazal focused here. Remember my quote before, because later on, by Jesus Rabbi, Simasim Samachet. What Chazal Hashem fastened upon was not the basic issue. Is there something which contained two senses of the term. If it takes the Bein Shleilam, which limits him and sets parameters for him, or not. We might fluff that, overlook that. But the critical issue here is what's the difference between the Yeshua and the Yaretz? Maybe I said before, one could take that as being minor detail, still some was in Europe, some was in Africa. Is that the case? Or are we driven to reject that discussion totally? And reject it not because it's inaccurate and therefore need to trouble us, but rather because the very concept of Shemayim Va'aretz opposed to Shemayim suggests a different kind of reality, even conception what Malkut Shemayim, what deity is all about. This point, Rashi quotes the Chazal, that the reason for the change and the expansion of the context to which Avraham is related has to do with the nature of Avraham's shmul missionary activity. Prior to Avraham's active campaign to indoctrinate, to educate, there'd be one identity Beretz Ben Shleilam. Presumably this means one credo, which is the mass culture, that of mass culture. But that was before, pre-Avraham. Post-Avraham, or the course of Avraham's stay, we have two elements, Kiryas Shemayim and Kiryas Haaretz. Here we, not as listening to Avraham telling us there, Avraham, in the context of that proposal, a retrospective description. But it's those kinds of psukim to draw not so much narrative information, but rather to draw basic elements of the Musa Deus, which have to do with one hand with the Ben Shleilam, and the other hand with us. It's several components to be done over here. But the difference between the two descriptions relate to a range of areas. The term Kiryas Shemayim could mean two things. Described as the locus from where he came, or more critically, what is material relation place mentioned. If that's the case, if it is related to that, then we're no longer talking about from where he is, but of what does he compose? Say, speak of the man of steel. So, not does he come from steel land. You're talking about what is the quote-unquote fabric, what is the chemistry, that is the physics of the relationship. And this, of course, sends, or should send, shockwaves into ourselves. The difference now is the difference not where he is, who he is, what he is. Here again, we have an analogy to what I mentioned previously. To do with the issue of location, we need to think not only about the particular location, but the concept of location. And similarly, if we were to want to interpret Keshemaim, the celestial deity, meaning that which he was not simply located in a particular place, but it's previously what is chemistry, what is composed, what are the electrons, what are the neurons, what are the protons, what are we talking about? Then we deal with the most fundamental question. Our answer presumably should be, forget it. As he has no location, he has no chemistry. There's no raw material of which he can compose. The Rambam, of course, raised this issue. He spoke first by the Mishnah about the quote unquote composition of the bench later. Because here speaks with that meaning numerically. This is not just a numerical one. It's rather for the mental issue. If there's one, if there are ten, what are they composed? All the same? Or is there some difference? And if all the same, and all X and all Y, are they looking back to the Greek conception of the elements? One of them is air. How do we relate to that? I believe clearly that answer to the first level should be and Musaguf and Aguf. There are no components, no elements, there are no units. This singularity and uniqueness, totally different from everything else. The other, that's a primary level. Merely that, of course, short circuits, that's the question. Once you say, is that composed of anything? So, don't need to answer the second question of what is he composed? Of celestial raw material or terrestrial raw material? And so, we're sensitive to this point. We can use the should it phrase respectfully, to relate, to explain the two stages, two phases in an author's experience activity. Now that explanation in itself is remarkable. In effect, what says that when dealing with the question of ventilator, and this question of composition, the reality of how the relation is conceived and perceived, that undergoes a radical change, is transfigured according to the activity of one man. And that one man, Zalman Boravit, generates a camp of thousands. But that person below that, the Rav Nachman, and I'm not sure to disagree with that. But in any event, the change from non to be immaterial to be material, that's perfect. Let's describe it that part. Now, what's the difference to Kishon Kiharetz? We don't deal with location. We don't deal with material. We have two related factors. But the common denominator is that we get away from the issue, ask questions about the Manishleilam, in terms of his being in his essence, instead focus upon ourselves, our relation to him, or if you will, his relation to us, and no longer dealing with what he is and who he is, but the sense where he is after we've factored out the question of location as such. It asks questions based on what I've described heretofore. It's frightening, it's remarkable. The only way that we can understand the Pasuk, or want to understand the Pasuk, the Pesukim, is to rid ourselves of the most basic questions, which naturally a primitive mind and a primitive heart, a primitive philosophy, was focused upon. They were asked to theologize, philosophize, after we shelved all of that, and left with pure abstraction. There's all the difficulties related to trying to make sense of it. But at the very least, it's much easier to ask, because we now say not what is the Mishleilam per se, but where is he in relation to us and we in relation to him. That is a question which certainly can be raised and answered without debasing the relationship. Whatever do Samachu Shemaim, Samachu Shemaim. If here we're dealing, like the thesis was out of many cases, they met up with Om. So having no Om, that deficiency of the relationship. It's a fact of life, a fact of history. Where is he? And what is he? If you deal not with the chemistry of the physics, but rather with the position vis-a-vis any created cosmos, or to be created cosmos, they have subjects, אחרי כל הכל, זה הזמר שמו נקרא. So what is the impact, what is the significance of having or not having the Om? Is that nevertheless a dimension of his existence of his being? In terms of its functioning, change from Kishra Giyaretz, from Kishraim to Kishra Giyaretz, is not to be viewed as a change, has shown in composition, if you're always to change status. Status vis-a-vis those to emulate. Change status itself. He also be viewed from one or two perspectives. Status could change the initiative of the Ben Shalom. And the result of initiative on the part of someone else, something else. Meshim could transform himself from being not Melech to being Melech by creating a polity over which he's going to rule, and by Hekot HaKov then the brother in Melech Torah there will be Melech. Or to say, but this meaning Meshim could change him, no one else could have done it. Or to say, no, once the vision of humanity was created, and we deal not with what the Mishnah has, owns property, owns the world, owns the Commonwealth, we're not worried about that, rather dealing substantively how he functions, and where do he functions. And here, there is indeed a transformation. The way we serve the soul, what kind of transformation? Here we begin to ask questions about the Mishnah. What respect is the difference between Kishra Giyaretz and Yomsur Kishmaim alone? First, Chazal make, of course, is that prior to Avraham's missionary activity, the status of the Mishnah, not its composition, not its location, not its essential, quintessential being, but the context within which exists, to which he relates, that idea was changed. It changed not in any way to be subsequently of any significance, because its basic essence remains, but of what is composed, so to speak. Yes, being of nothing, that is indeed changed, not by Mishnah activity, but by human activity. But there's a question to be raised nonetheless, a difference between prior to the latest stage, should free us of what we're discussing over here, being a ruler, not being a ruler, is an inherent basic difference, status and position, in essence, or not. And here, of course, we count the theological positions, worldviews, which indeed say you agree with us that Shemayim is ours, fine, but that's a different deity. And of course we come across the central question, monotheism. Said the question of Komo is to position the man Shalom in a way that he comes to the totality of the world, and because he comes to the totality, one cannot limit him, define him in any way. But this is accompanied from that point of view by change in essence as well. Was to function in relational capacity is indeed, one might argue, to be transformed from an essential, in its essential sense as well. And while the beginning of the change has to do with something external, extraneous, what surrounds him, what does he control? But that in and of itself produces differences, so that when I begun simply minor questions as to where he is, changes that's transformed the question of what he is, whether being a ruler or not a ruler. It goes through kinds of realities. The answer which the Torah had to this is an answer which apparently needed to be formulated, emphasized, and the most radical of terms. There are a number of places where Jesus needs to write his other. Payas and Adibris, primarily in the Parsha of Eschanan, Tavis Kulev, Tetsu Behemoth, etc., etc. In both places which you have, and it's there that the primary Yisrael of his other is to be found, this is formulated with an eye to function and only to essence, or rather beginning with function and moving on to essence. You can't have that which is described in the Thomas. She means something which has locus, but that's not the way Shleilam. Can't have something which functions and has sovereignty. She might both not tell us. All that needs to be stricken out. And needs thing in terms of locus, but that locus is a defining essence and a defining role and function. what does this mean, theologically speaking, and what does it mean for us? First, heaven and earth, Shemaim and Eretz, good in conjunction, or even by dint, of their function and their character, that might reflect a different adherent reality. That's not the sort of what we're familiar with in the classical world. In Greek theology, Olympian theology, prior to the Olympian deities, they were Uranus and Gay, heaven and earth. And the danger of this is going to dominate this kind of thinking, going to dominate the mood of Klal Yisrael, is going to turn anticipated. And obviously totally rejected. No Uranus, no Gay. No context, no location. Kind of negative existence related to the list of characteristics which you have at the beginning of our six confessions, Hanuman and Vuchim. What is there, what is there not? And what we have in effect is when Pastor tells us, what we read to the spectrum of Chazal, that this is the version of the Kirshvayim, Kibir Kiyaretz, taken in one sense could mean something in him had been transfused, transformed, essentially, quintessentially, and that we reject totally. But if you want to speak his role and what he has in the bank, so to speak, there indeed you could conceivably imagine that there's a shift and a change in function, and then ask yourself, does that make for a different essence or not? Now this of course translates into issues which have got reaction to which responses. How can we raise such questions, deal with them? Do we have the capacity? Do we have the right to speculate this way about the Rosh Hashanah? And that presumably is no. He is what he is. We can at most know what he is not. The negative theology, as developed by Rashi Mishnah, both of Palestine and the Rambam. But here we begin to run into a problem. The issue which I discussed previously is allied to another issue. This is the element of anthropomorphism. That which the Rambam fought tooth and nail, which Unkelutz resisted categorically, but which, unfortunately, some of the later Goyim, none of those reservations, and we'll think some anthropomorphic terms. Anthropomorphism is the bane of pure religious speculation. It's that which undermines the ability and the readiness purge our conception of the Rosh Hashanah and you have strange settlement, at most speaking in terms of function, not beyond that. These issues with Vestat and Bershenim, it's an interesting essay. Pakiva Shem Yisrael, Professor Abidovich, he did that office in the Rabbi of Sadigoyen. But it's a persistent threat. The ability to identify Shmaim V'Oretz some parallel, some synonym to Baruch Shmaim. One context arises in Gemara Shavuos, but one which should need to differentiate what we're talking about over here. First of Shavuot, the kinds of Shavuot require use of Shem. So they just say that I will do this, will do this. I'm glad to call it an oath and Shavuot. But not be dean until that Shem, who is not of any rate, it's not Shavuot at all. Because Shavuot needs to relate to such a transcendent reality. And that requires the use of Shem as defining, representing that transcendence. So the mind, that's the mission of Shavuos. Ashbani Aleichem, Mitzavani Aleichem, Mitzachem Ani, Reinu Chayori, the person exercises the right to have a Shavuos Eidus, comes to somebody and says, come to say this on my behalf, and the fellow refuses. He says, by the name of Beishleif, by Shavuot, I adjure you to state that indeed you don't know. I say you do know. The Shavuot says this. So what Shem does he use? The Mishnah says later on, that he uses one of the Shem's of Shem, and eventually Shem. That soon becomes the focus of the discussion of Shem's. The Mishnah goes on to say, Vashrei Ba'aretz, if he says, I assure you, by the Hermon, the earth, those are his sources of reference. I had to it. That's not sure. Well, there's all discussion as to why should I vow it? Does fit the bill? And there are two spaces here. One is Shemai Varets cannot be used as a Shem, because the Bishlev is one thing and Shem is another thing. Or differently, even if you could use Shavuot as such, but you have to be explicit. And it's not explicit. The simpler and the pure reading is that Shmai V'Oretz are in no way substitute this is Hashem, even if you're talking about the word, not about the concept. And where does this leave us? Sense, Baruch Shemayim is something transcendental. In essence, Mishnah should not be vast and there's no components to be there. And we cannot regard the term survivors, but the other survivors have been anyway something divine. But that's all post of them. Three of them, indeed, the world was filled with the worship animal, fish, any kinds of things which have some material aspect to their reality. And what does the world do? Let's see, it doesn't describe it as such, but that's what we need to infer. Shalibowitz once said about the Rambam that the whole Rambam's Vatsavi labors at one thing, to fight the banish of its own. But to many of us that sounds rather exaggerated. But in a certain sense, it's certainly true. Rambam understood that Rabbi Zohar, he's not the only one, Rabbi Zohar is not simply inculcating belief in the existence of the Mishnah. It's belief in the nature and the character of existence. As people eventually know, that is, who am I talking about? What am I talking about? And here we encounter a dreadful dilemma. It demands of us that a moon realization exists. In order to make such an assertion, or to entertain such an assertion, we have to know about who are we talking. And here we come across a terrible danger. We're locked in. One hand, there's a mitzvah, a mitzvah, about the Mishnah. On the other hand, we ask ourselves, well, we speak about the Mishnah, about who are we talking about? What are we talking? The answer is, we don't know. We cannot know. It's unknowable. You know what he is not. What he is, we don't know. So we're asked to believe, to express belief, and to accept, and to submit to that which we don't know what it is. In this sense, we're all sub-level of our soul. And that means not to live. We go out tomorrow and either have some kind of Greek rites or Greek Christianity. What it does mean is that there is a gap, correspondence between what and who the Reishleim whom we accept is, the gap between that and between what inwardly we actually do experience. So in all of us, there's a piece of thinking of the Vishnu, we think about Shemangot, a bit of the pantheist, which I said regards our resolve. Each and every one of us. My Shemai Boris is identified with the Mishnah. It's pantheism. Having that kind of dilemma, still interpreted and serving. One of the most terrible of Aveyas, with the blemish and the moon of each of us, driven to accept one of two things. Either to cut down the extent, depth of Rabbeinu Reshele, which nobody knows who he is, or if we insist, no, we're going to accept totality, and that totality includes components which we don't understand, then we end up professing something which you cannot actually relate to. What's said about the Rambam, and if you say about Rabbi, I mean, two great messages to the world. One was Chesed, the other was Zichur Hashem. What Zichur Hashem mean? It's two things. There's one and there's not two. But that must also mean that that one is indeed what he is, not what he is not. That one is not Shemayim, not Oretz, not any of the elements, not the four elements of the Greeks, not the other elements of modern chemistry. All of that is a mirage and a dilemma, a misstatement, and a variety of pure polytheism, a variety of idolatry. That's the whole thing was fighting. He had stood that dilemma, and needed to confront it. This sounds, in a way, odd. The theme of Avinu and its labors of Avinu Hashem and Muslim Lashayim. I've got the inclination, I believe, is to limit, not this, not that, only by monotheism, after all, limiting religion. And we present, we represent the Avraham Avinu as fighting by banishing, destroying, eliminating, so you're left only the Shulchan Hashem Echad. You hear the psukim, because I understand them, it's reverse. So Avraham Avinu began, why Avraham Avinu began, where Hashem was only the Keshemai. In terms of recognition, acknowledgement, and humanity. Rabbi David wanted to actually went to high gear. So what happened? Expanded. Not the constriction which we are likely to relate to Rabbi, you know. Not the contraction, but the expansion. We need to mistake this. What was constricted, what was expanded, two different things. The Beis's role, his situation, his position, vis-a-vis the world, the Melech in him, expanded. Before he had a Malchus which was limited, only a celestial Malchus, now celestial, celestial, it's cosmic, it's universal, it's cosmopolitan. Nothing escapes his grasp. That was the expansion. But terms of his being, so that at once it doesn't change at all, obviously. But in terms of how he's understood by others, that indeed undergoes the extension from what was before to what we have now. Let's question the scope of what is eventually of Melech in him. This is what Chachmei Kabbalah, I think, understand about Shvitim Lelusa. Shvitim Lelusa means that the Bein Shleilam at one point where there is no Bailiwood, total control, total mastery, total acceptance of acknowledgement. Melech Shmei Nikra, Melech all depends who are the subjects and how many of them acknowledge him. Shita Yisrael Shinte, which was his home base. Melusa, some class that don't acknowledge, but not that the Shin is found in any context. And reduces Kavayokan status, reduces Malchus. And in a broader sense, the issues we have here relate to Sovietism and pantheism. Here's the 13th century variety. To what extent says we have no quarrel with purity of the racial existence. We have no quarrel with his being. And again, Shemai disrespect. And being composed of nothing. But in terms Melech in him, both that which is, that which we want should be, we have some control over how much Malchus he has. There we challenge traditional religion and say, and live with the Melech. Especially that revelation of the Chazal, Rabbi Tanya says, faith, that there's a famine, a lady complained of Eishleilam, you ascended heavenward and deserted your children. And once he was punished for making that statement. In fact, what Levi is saying, he has a complaint. You become a Geshemite, no yards. That suits the deists just fine. That suits the pantheist. It doesn't suit the Jew. In this vein, it all comes back. Question of Ashkoch. Dealing with issues of something over here, fundamental theological, philosophic issues, we deal with some of the central tenets, not only of our world, but of natural religion, if you have it in Plato, if you have it in Herbert Shrewsbury, in the 17th century. The Tiva Ashgach is to what extent providential rule is the rule. The question of the extent to which not the Vaishnav is composed of some chemistry, some physics, has to be there. But the extent to which he's involved in his capacity as Melech, the death of the Malchus is generally related. How much of that do we need or must subscribe to? Must we accept this total rule, total Ashraka, over the more limited nature? The Melech of some and the Melech of others, the Melech some of the time, not all the time, the Melech in some places, not other places. And this issue, we do encounter different differences. Popular theology certainly assumes, as I know Shimon Yikra, that it has some so called, Malchus has to do with Kol. Everything and the aegis and purview of Malchus Shemayim. Now that need not necessarily translate into total action. It's knowledge. Malchus Shemayim knows all of that. Relates to it that it has to be vain. But not necessarily any action taken in relation to it. Anything was generated by the knowledge, by the awareness. Both Rambam and Rambam assume that Ashur HaPratis should all cherish your sense of safety. It's indeed total. And from a certain point of view, the Melech, the Rambam and the Ramban, that was the thing I mentioned before about the Rambam's fight against Rabbi Zohar, but the fight against Rabbi Zohar, a popular religion, not a fight in some of its aspects, the level of providential rule involvement. And here we come back to the point of the departure. What was before Avraham, after Avraham? Location is out of the question. The locus of Vishnu. Material composition is out of the question. Even if we deal with the purest, most ethereal of elements. And it's Musa Gufa and Lagu. If, however, we deal with the nature of the existence of Israel and His Majesty, His hegemony, and to what extent is that subject to change, dependent upon the mainstream's desires, or human desire and rebellion or acceptance, here indeed, we have some input as to making more Melech or less Melech. There's a daring element about this, but includes discussions that obviously all the time, and the Nevi Rosh Hashanah we define within the word of Chabad as Kavanat Sinah, their coronation. More respect. It's constant in Shleilam, placed him in the pedestal of total Malchus, not partial Malchus. We're engaged by this particular Ashkofe to do with the Rebbe Rosh Hashanah, encouraged and pressed. The Rebbe Rosh Hashanah, but others assume we should be doing all year. And to do it in effect, what all of you did. Found the world, pre-Koranashe, left the world, post-Koranashe. It's an enormous challenge, but tremendous importance for us, personally and collectively. which relates to our activity, to what extent we are indeed creating the Zemar Shemo Nikra, not just Nikra, but he is. And to what extent we are internalizing the element of faith, affirmation, and what it is, we indeed crowd the mention of Zemar Shemo Nikra as total of form as we can. It's in a sense our tragedy and the pain of our existence can't do without purity. And we have to decide through deism, pantheism, through other forms of belief, that's something we need to relate to, challenge. One which can't execute perfectly. But the Mesh knows that. If he's imposed by us a duty, an onus which we can't accept fully, Yahweh will handle it. As long as we try, it's speaking. Our formulation, make a bracha, and of course that bracha, Melech HaOlam, would do.
Thank you very much, Rav Lichtenstein. We're going to bench now. Noah, did you have bread? Okay, so if you can leave benching, and then we'll go into mitzvah for those of you who have mitzvah. Yeah, we have to have 10 minutes.